Guys, running a business, a successful one in the fitness industry is simple. It's not easy. It is a lot of hard work. You know that. But when I say it's simple, most of you guys kind of roll your eyes like, who the fuck are you telling? This is hard as hell. And the reason it seems hard for most of you is because you came into this thing with a lot of knowledge as a fitness professional, not a business professional. That is why I made Micro Gym University, the first online school for micro gym owners who did not have the benefit of being in the fitness industry prior, that tackled this endeavor of theirs of opening their own business without really actually learning business first. There is a saying, you've all heard it, work smarter, not harder. I drop a line or a piece of advice on a podcast or a video and you guys gobble that up. You're like, oh my God, that's fucking genius. Why didn't I think of that? And to me and others like me who have been in this industry for a while, we just take that for granted because we were blessed to have the educational side of being a business owner. We're not having to chase it on the back end when we have rent due and payroll. So if you're interested in leveling up and working smarter, not harder, please shoot me a DM on Instagram at WTF Gym Talk. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions you might have, and we can find out whether enrollment within Micro Gym University is a good choice for you and your business. Guys, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the podcast. Alrighty, guys, it is Stu and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. And I have Miranda Alcarez on the podcast. Miranda is, from my experience in the micro gym industry, I first experienced her in her role as a CrossFit Games athlete and this competitor out of the West Coast and this amazing phenom of an athlete. And then life changes, things evolve. Babies happen, marriages happen, businesses happen, injuries happen. You have gone through quite the transition. And we actually got to meet in person at the Iron and Mortar Summit, the last one they had in Portland, which is right in your backyard, correct?
Yeah, where we live now in Washington, it's like right over the bridge.
Okay. So we got to meet in person. You guys were there as a keynote speaker talking to everyone about street parking, the company you created with your husband. And I wanted to jam with you. I made that segment on one of the episodes of the show, and talking about the rise of online fitness companies is going to be big, not just in the digital sector, I believe, but in this very, and I don't like using the word basic, but in this way more basic and elementary than the digital Peloton Fitness Plus kind of world of coming up with programming and creating community around it. And a lot of people ask me, is that even a viable business model? So I laid out three options. Yours was my highlight there, because I believe what you guys have done is so incredible. So Miranda, I'm going to assume everyone listening to this has got at least a grasp on who you are, and I don't want to spend too much time on the background of it. I'd like to jump right into the street parking element. Walk me through at the point you end the career as a professional athlete in the CrossFit functional fitness realm. I'm sure there are people probably even wanting to throw money to back you and say, open a gym, you'd kill it. Why did you decide to go online then?
So something that not a lot of people know, and maybe you don't even know about me, is I actually owned a gym from 2008 to 2011 in Salt Lake City, Utah. I was the first CrossFit affiliate in Salt Lake City. So for those, I know a lot of your listeners are gym owners, obviously. I have done that. It was an early affiliate and it was great. I mean, I would call it successful. We didn't make a lot of money. Like, I wasn't like rolling in the dough, but I was able to pay myself, and we had like a community of like 150 members back then. So, because it had been something I had done before, I think I had the experience of knowing how much work it is to run an affiliate. And I lived in Southern California, where there's McDonald's
block.
And it's like they're all over the place, and great affiliates. Rent down there is so expensive and all of that. So, it just wasn't something that appealed to me to do again, but I think, affiliates and brick and mortars are important, and I love that they exist, and I hope that they, at least some of them, can continue to exist, because I think they are important. But that's the main reason, is I had done it before, and just knew that it wasn't something that I wanted to do again.
So you made the decision, obviously looking back on it now, that was a very wise move given the current state of affairs. And you start this, and I love the idea of street parking.
And I even like, you know, in Googling the marketing around it, you know, even, you know, I know Rogue and their garage gym thing, like that was a big kind of even a lingo or a, let's call it a tagline they used on selling their, mm-hmm. their garage gym equipment. And this concept of park your car on the street, get a great workout in. At what point did you guys think, was there a business model you wanted to model this after? You're like, okay, I think we can do this. Or at least we have an idea of what I call the belief in fitness, get really efficient, good workouts in, get back to life, kids, work, whatever it may be. What were you looking, was there anyone you were looking at that was like, I kind of see how they've done it. I'll do something like that.
No, I think you nailed it with just like, was there a belief? Because that's all there was. When we started street parking, it started as an Instagram page, not a pay for program. And it was just kind of, hey, we've noticed that when we post workouts at home or in a hotel room that are more simple than what we do. And when I say we, I mean myself and Julian, who is now my husband, who's my boyfriend at the time, that there's a huge response from people that are like, hey, I could do this at my house, or I could do this, you know, at a regular gym and I don't have to make it to class at the CrossFit gym. And so I knew, and I had the belief that it could be that simple, that workouts could be that simple and still be effective, because for 8 years at that point, I had traveled every weekend while having goals of competing in CrossFit. And I, you know, I guess that means a quarter of my workouts were done in hotel gyms, you know? So I knew it was possible. I had the belief that it was possible. And we didn't start street parking with any sort of intention of it becoming a full-time business for either one of us, let alone both of us and the staff.
And you and Julian, he competed at a high level as well too, correct?
Yeah, he competed in the 2015 games. And then he was, I think, like sixth or seventh at regionals in 16. And then in 17, he qualified and did not go because my due date was on the same day that the games were supposed to start.
Like a good hubby.
Yeah.
So I guess what I want to go to this belief in fitness. I believe there were two things I talked about that you needed to have in order to have an online, I believe to have an online successful company. I said personal brand. And what I meant by that was not, you know, 70,000 followers, but a channel, I don't care what it is. It could be a blog or anything where you talk about your, you need an outlet for this belief in fitness, right? I use, you know, Marcus Philly, if he just showed up one day and said, you know what, instead of doing snatches, I'm going to do tempoed bicep curls to a strict press with an upside down kettlebell. It would have been jarring. It would have made sense. But he had been talking about this idea of mm-hmm. hypertrophy and tempo. So people were able to make that connection. With you guys, I mean, we're looking at you squatting the worm. We're, you know, you're doing the legless rope climbs. You're doing the badass stuff. And then through children and a different style of life. Is that where that belief in fitness came in, or what, like where, what, when did it switch for you? Was there ever a part where like, we're going to do these dumbbell workouts in the garage, but honestly, like let's not film the crazy shit we're doing, you know, offsite, like the crazy CrossFit stuff that we miss doing and that we have been bred to do previously.
Mm-hmm. I actually think that the belief in it being that simple started, well, first of all, when I started CrossFit style training, it was in 2007 and it was much more simple and yeah. No one was a professional competitor. And it was, you know, there was more people just grabbing what equipment they could find and making it work. And there was, people weren't worried about, you know, if they did it exactly RX and things like that. So I got to start with a group that had that kind of mindset from the get-go. And then again, the travel did a lot for me, but also I suffered even before my knee injury that took me out of competing. I suffered, my neck injury,
like car accident, correct?
Yeah. Which has been talked about on way too many podcasts at this point, but basically I had to really simplify my training even then. So I had a lot of opportunities to learn about how effective and important just consistency is, even if it doesn't look as cool as what people like to post on social media. And I had shared all of those stories along the way. So when you're talking about personal brand, I had shown myself scaling completely when my neck was injured. When I injured my knee, I had shown myself scaling, but continuing to move. I had always shown me doing random workouts in hotels and things like that. So it wasn't like all of a sudden like, oh, all we've ever seen is this. And now all of a sudden, all you need is dumbbells. It flowed pretty smoothly. And in fact, when we started the street parking Instagram and had the idea for even the community, I didn't know that I was pregnant yet. I found out I was pregnant after we had the idea for street parking. And I do believe that it fed it completely. because that is a demographic that really has gravitated to working out at home, obviously. But it wasn't until after that I even thought about that demographic, to be honest.
Sure. I always think about from a, you know, branding and marketing is the thing, probably a business that interests me the most. And you always see things that are contrasting draw eyeballs. So if we had a very heavy set individual walking on a tightrope, people would watch that. They're like, oh my God, how the hell are they doing that? And when you have someone as fit as you, like, and then doing just basic exercises, there's something, there's a contrast there. And there's an appeal to that of like, oh, hey, that's kind of like, I can see myself doing that. I think, you know, for a lot of the CrossFit gyms I work with, sometimes the imagery, the stuff they put on their Instagram and the Facebook, it gets so advanced. It's a little show off. Mm-hmm. It's a little more whatever. And people just instantly discount it. Like, that's just not me. There's no way I'm ever climbing that rope without my legs, whatever it may be. Where did you guys first, like, obviously the niche, one of the niches that you really attract, obviously now stay-at-home parents, people with kids. You have a story now that they are able to relate to. You have two children. What was your very first kind of niche of audience? Was it like CrossFitters who didn't want to go to a gym anymore? Like, what was your very first audience, would you say, or was it the parents?
I don't think it was the parents right at first, because again, I didn't know that I was pregnant yet when we first started it. I would say that it was people who either couldn't afford or didn't want to pay for whatever reason, a CrossFit gym, or lived in too far away from, like, people that just had, there was a barrier to getting to a CrossFit gym for them, whatever the barrier might have been, but they loved the style of training and they had followed me or Julian for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, they met me in my level one or randomly found me on Instagram. That was definitely the first group.
Okay. So, and I remember one of the things that I can't remember is you or Julian was talking about it in your keynote at the Iron and Mortar Summit. You guys were talking about, you know, a lot of the people we get, gym owners, we hear these very, let's call them failed customer service experiences that they had at a brick and mortar similar to yours, which made them disenchanted with the brand and the idea of going to a CrossFit-like gym. And there they are at home and then they find us and now it's that happy medium. We cover that white space. Now in the COVID world, I mean, you know, if we were to get businessy, what percentage did you guys climb in membership during COVID?
We increased by, I'm not good at percentages, but we increased by like 30%.
Okay. And I mean, obviously people being displaced from their gyms.
Yeah. So of course we tried really hard and we do still try hard in our messaging to, when we market, to be like, hey, we're not trying to replace or steal you from your gyms. If you love your gym and it's available to you now, stay there and you can afford it and everything, stay there. So our messaging when COVID happened was like, listen, let us give you an alternative. We did a discounted 3-month membership because we were like, well, that'll cover it, you know, the entire time that we're going to be stuck at home. Yeah. And when you're done, like, be temporary with us. When you're done, go back to your gyms. It's great, but let us help you out in the meantime. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have stayed, not everybody, of course, you know, working out at home, no matter how good of a service we provide or another program provides, not everybody's going to like it. And I don't think it takes a special kind of individual, but, I mean, not everybody likes everything. Sure. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's fine.
Working out at home it's somebody, again, like when you don't have the requirements, like my daughter's sleeping upstairs right now. Right. So like that makes sense to me. It's a leveraging of my time. However, if I go back to 27-year-old me and I didn't have any responsibilities, working out at home, it's like, that's not motivating. I need to see other bodies like mine doing something to beat me. Yeah. I believe that, you know, a lot of people are looking at this current time and the down, obviously brick and mortar fitness is on a downslide, a huge downtick, and everyone thinks it's a rebound. And I'm personally one of those. However, I do believe there's gonna be a lot of people who realize I actually don't need the in-person real life competition of somebody as much. I don't need the coach as much as I thought I did. I want the direction. All I want to do is not think, what am I doing today? That's probably one of the biggest things people tell you. It's like, I just love that I just look on street parking. This is what I'm doing. Here are my options. I can pick different, you know, tracks, whatever it is. And I just do that. I just go and execute and I get right back to work. you know, with life or whatever that may be. Do you, you know, you mentioned some people have stayed, things of that nature. Do you ever have deeper conversations with individuals at this current time that decide not to go back? Is it, hey, what you've created customer service wise or experience wise is better than my brick and mortar? Or is it, I still don't feel comfortable enough to go back yet?
We hear more of the first option, like the experience is better. And not from, Siri thought I was talking to her. Hold on. not from all of them, but we do see, so I'll run down some of the things that we see. We do see people saying, I never even experienced this much of coaching at my in-person gym, because we provide not only just a workout, we throw it on the, you know, Wattify or whatever and then peace out, but we provide like, here's how to choose your weight, here's how long one round should take, here's how broken up each set should be. If it's more broken up than that, it's probably too heavy. Like, we go pretty deep into it with every workout. Here's a bunch of different options for subs and modifications based on equipment or your ability level. Like, we spend a lot of time. I don't know that a lot of people realize that we do all of that. And we do have quite a few members, and we've seen it, not just since COVID, but since we started, of, I was never given this information in class. Like, that's crazy. So there's that. And then I think, you know, one of the things that I touched on when we met in Portland was the gym community can be the best thing in the world, but it can also be a huge issue if it is turned into a negative way.
Clicky high school scenario.
Yeah, where people feel pressured to use a heavier weight than they want to use, or they feel pressured to like perform at a certain level, even if they've had a shitty day or they didn't sleep last night, or, you know, they're not feeling it. There's clicks, there's people feeling left out, things like that, where when you work out at home, you know, on our Facebook group, people find each other and they have their, I mean, I guess for lack of a better term, there are little clicks as well, but people kind of find their groups and their, and we encourage everybody to lift each other up and things like that. So there's still a very community vibe, but if you don't want to see anyone in person, if you don't want to talk to anybody, if you don't want to share what your workout score was, no one's anonymity. Watching, no one cares.
Yes. Yeah. It's so I work with a lot of spin studios as well, and I'll have CrossFit gym owners or other fitness modalities. Like, what is it about a spin studio that gets so many people to want to go to it? It's like, you got to understand, it's uniformity. Everyone's doing the same thing, and it's anonymity. It's dark as fuck in there. No one sees what you look like. Whereas a CrossFit gym, if you're dead last in a, you know, a four rounds for time, everyone knows you're dead last, right? In a spin studio, you're just cycling maybe a little bit slower, and you know,
you just turn the dial down a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly. And you don't have that and stuff like that. And anonymity is something that I think a lot of people opt into. Even look at Peloton, Peloton's numbers. The majority of people do archived classes. They don't do the live one. You know, there's extra pressure to when you're performing live and people can see it and instructors can call you out and things of that nature. You mentioned something on business side, Wattify. Very interesting choice for an online company. I talk with LCK at Paragon Training Methods. She uses Wattify too. And I said, Lori, what the hell? What are you using Wattify for? It's not even built for an online platform. She's like,
what did she say?
She had probably same thing. My guess is you're going to say, bro, we have so many people on there. If I switch platforms, do you know the hit I would take if we had to do an entire transition of people with thousands of people, switch them to another platform? Also, the simplicity of knowing something and the familiarity of knowing something is sometimes a comfort level for you. Why do you guys use Wattify? Because it is definitely not built for what you do.
Not at all. A couple reasons. One is, again, this wasn't meant to be a 30,000 person community. We wanted like 100
people. Is that what you're at to right now? 30,000?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. Good on you. I love that.
Thank you. So, you know, we thought we were going to have like 100 people. And at the time I had been with NorCal, who used Wattify, and I had been training at Chalk, which used Wattify. So it was just what I
knew
was using. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys, have you guys ever had the business discussion of like, there's a lot of shortfalls here. Would you ever switch and migrate them over? Is it similar to like what LCK said? Like, dude, you do the sleepy bear thing. There's a lot of people on there. I do not want to switch platforms, and you will lose a good amount of people if you do that. It will be a hit.
So yeah, and we have Wattify for logging is not the best, but it works for us. We've had discussions about it, and we've talked to Wattify about it, and we're working on ways to improve some things. Because I mean, and they've been honest with us, like, we didn't build this to have 30,000 people all trying to log onto one leaderboard at the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's not at all what they built it for either. So, yeah, of course. I mean, we're well aware of it, and definitely discussions have been going on for over a year now about it.
I threw up on Instagram, you know, that I was going to be jamming with you and ask some questions. Someone asked, like, why do they use Wattify? And I didn't respond. I wanted to wait till this. But the other thing too is, I think a lot of people also assume success. Dude, Miranda, go get a custom app. You're right there. You know, you're right down the street from Silicon Valley, kind of a couple states over. Get one of those nerds to build you out. Like
ordering a cheeseburger or something.
Exactly. But also, the thing about an online business that's beautiful is that it's lean. The overhead is low. Keep it low, unless there's something that's absolutely preventing a key piece of the client experience. Stay with what works. If it's not broke, don't fix
it.
I think it's
possible.
Too many times those business owners are like, those assault bikes are okay, but I'd really like to get you spend $7,000 on Echo bikes. Like, did you really need to do that? Was that a great utilization of your money?
Right. And for us, logging, we care about tracking people's attendance and stuff. We don't care so much about scores and things like that. We don't make that. It's not a big part of our emphasis. And so for us to spend millions of dollars on something that's not really that big of a deal to us anyway, doesn't make sense. So.
What is the average price point that someone is paying for street parking?
Well, so if it's monthly, it's $19 a month. But we have like a discount for service members. And then of course, if they pay for like 3 months or 6 months or a year in advance, it's cheaper per month, but.
What's the cheapest it could get?
What's 180 divided by 12?
180 divided by 12 is 15. So between 15 and 19.
Yeah, so the service members, yeah.
Okay, so between $15 and $19 a month, and I'm doing the quick math here of 30,000 times 15. And
sure everyone is.
Everyone is quickly pulling that math out right now. With what you have, the one thing you were amazing. This is my favorite line. I think someone asked you a question in Q&A or something, and you were very open admitting. They're like, I'm not going to lie. I don't exactly know how we got, like, we've just been doing the right by our clients, doing the right thing for the right people, following our truth, doing, I don't have like a script to give you. I don't know the playbook necessarily. Now, that was like 2 years ago, I think, whenever that was that we all jammed. Now that you sit here now and you're sitting on a company of that magnitude and revenue and the impact, let's put the money aside, but the impact of the people, do you now feel more CEO-ish? But that laugh makes me think no. But do you look at the business more at like, okay, like we've made it. This is amazing. I can't think. This definitely isn't a fluke. We're totally on to something. You probably have the lifestyle you want. You're happy. You're able to do what's right for your family and take care of your kids. But like as a business owner, where does the business side of your brain go with this whole thing with street parking?
Yeah. I think, so it's a good thing now we have a team. So while you're doing the math of 30,000 times whatever, there's like 40 people that work for us.
Yeah.
Just so everybody knows now. I'm not super, in ways, I guess I am, I have strengths in business. My biggest strength, me personally, and what I have realized, what I have contributed, which is, it's not just me alone, it's me plus William plus the 40 people that are helping us at this point, right? But my contribution is the belief, going back to that belief, like truly, authentically, to my core, believing that what I'm saying and that we're delivering to these members is important and will help them. And it is just as much my lifestyle that I'm living myself every single day as what I'm trying to help them to achieve. So I do think that one mistake that a lot of people make, whether it's people that see us doing what we're doing and be like, oh, I'm just going to do that, even though they don't really get excited about dumbbells and sandbags or believe in it. Or you see, you know, CrossFit Games athletes who all of a sudden are doing fucking jumping lunges and they're bathroom and it's not at all what they actually do for their training.
Sure.
It just people, it doesn't work. They can see right through it. And I think one of the things that we've always had going for us is realness and authenticity and just the message. And we just, our message is just repeating the same thing over and over and over again, and not trying to glamorize it, not trying to make it sexy, not trying to, you know,
consistency is key, well, better than nothing. Yes. These are two core tenets of yours.
Yes. Yeah. So I think I just have a way with the messaging, and a lot of the messaging and the marketing type stuff comes from me. But as far as the business goes and organizing that, we have help with numbers and probably stop spending money on this, or we have more money to spend on this. Like I'm not smart with any of that, but we do have help with that now.
I, you know, whenever I think of, you know, I'll talk to a gym owner, like, I want a cool brand. And what is a cool brand, right? And to me, it's something that's just authentic. And like you said, our bullshit meters are so high. We can cut through bullshit like that. We recognize and sniff it out in a heartbeat. So they're authentic. You can tell they're real, and they just do it always consistently, right? Like mm-hmm. McLovin in that movie was fucking cool. Because he was a nerd, and he was a nerd during the entire damn movie. It's just who he was. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think of for you, especially when I saw, and I love the realness of when you were doing your vlogs during pregnancy and the ones where you were having, let's call it a more emotional day than others, right? The realness of that. And I've always been of the belief, I looked at what K-Star did with Mobility Wad. This guy literally every day committed to, I'm just going to wherever I'm at, airport, at home with the kids, his mm-hmm. kids are running in and out. He didn't do a second take. He just, come here, whatever. And he just, you know, strapped them up in a band or whatever. And the mm-hmm. realness in what you have, there's nothing more magnetic, in my opinion, than someone who doesn't produce content, just documents, this real shit is literally happening right now. I was watching a bunch of your IG stuff where you're literally just sitting in your car, jamming on a topic that just hits your head. Like, you can tell, I just thought about this. I feel some kind of way. Listen up, fuckers. I got something to say on this topic. And there's nothing more real than that. And you have a platform to do so. And that platform, I feel like I get personally annoyed when I hear individuals discredit the hard work of others because in a previous life or whatever, there was maybe notoriety and awareness. How much do you hear of that bullshit? Well, if she didn't originally or have X amount of followers, if she hadn't been at the games and blah, 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 and she wasn't Miranda, this thing would not have taken off like it did. Do you hear that?
I do hear that. And actually, going back to where you're podcast where you were talking about us before, what I really appreciated, and I might have told you this, I might have not, was you bringing up the fact that I've probably lost followers. Let me tell you, in building this 30,000 member business, and actually the Street Parking Instagram has 120,000 followers on it. When I started that Instagram account, the Street Parking Instagram account, I had, I think, 45,000 more followers on my personal page than I have today. So I have lost like close to 50,000 followers on my personal page through pregnancy, through not doing slow-mo muscle ups anymore and booty shorts and posting pictures with, you know, Julian and my kids. But I've built this second Instagram following with a message that I believe in and a business because I've stuck to what's actually real and true and not tried to worry about what's going to get me to 1 million followers. Well, let me tell you, if I film the workouts from behind and below me with booty shorts on, my Instagram following would be through the roof. My business, probably not nearly what it is.
Yeah. And with that, the following, you know, let's call it like you essentially trim the fat, you trim the people that were there for the ass shots and all that. And you now have like this core following, which is, it's similar. It's like when a gym does a price raise. The people that were just there to fuck, you know, whatever. And they're like, oh my, I'm not fucking, I'm leaving. I'll go to the next cheap gym. The people that are there, like they're real. And then you did something that I thought was incredible. We talked about a little bit in Portland. You took the online and you created in-person IRL, in real life experiences. It's summer camp, is it correct?
Yes. We had to cancel all of that this year, but yes.
Yeah. So you had this summer camp and there is a quiet, what I call like a simple genius to someone who has an amazing online thing and has the realization that there's nothing that will tie this group together like a once a year, maybe twice a year kind of event that everyone looks forward to and they want to attend. And I thought like gym owners, affiliate owners, they wanted Glassman to have an annual affiliate summit. They did it a couple of years in the early days, mm-hmm. and then he never did it again. These guys begged for it. So instead, they'd go to Iron and Mortars and Selfmade and all these different others independently put on things because they were looking for that attachment with the rest of the affiliate community. And you guys realize that, and you put on this, you know, from the images and content I saw, it looked fun as fuck. Everyone just having a good time, you know. Talk to me a little bit about the decision to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. Like, people have formed real friendships through our online community, people who have never met each other at all. So giving them an opportunity, and they do meetups on their own, like without us. Before COVID happened, there was like 6 or 7 meetups around the world happening where members would find each other and get together. But we created the idea of Street Parking Summer Camp, kind of in a way that, you know, CrossFit annually, I guess, has the games, and CrossFit is known to be very, whether it's intentional or not, very, very focused on performance and highlighting the elite, which is great. Our focus is on highlighting the community and just, you know, more the real people in the trenches doing the thing. And so we created summer camp where there were like events, but the events would be them like sliding down a slip and slide into a pool of jello and, you know, searching for ping pong balls, you know, things like that. And they brought their kids and they met each other, and we put them on teams with each other to help them form bonds. And it was so great. So we had summer camp, and then we were doing a Vegas, which we had to cancel this year, but we did the year before. And then we were going to the Hawaiian Trail Run too. So those were kind of like our three big yearly things that we had done a few times.
With that, and obviously, you know, the proof is in the pudding that, you know, people are paying for this thing, but they're also traveling. They would come out to these events doing all that. From a business perspective, I've got a lot of guys and girls. They're displaced from a brick and mortar. They're out of a business as a trainer or coach, or their business mm-hmm. is completely shut down. You know, just on Monday, San Francisco CrossFit announced they are closing. So,
dang.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, and Kelly, I mean, he's been in it 15 years.
Yeah. And so, I've been to that gym several times.
Yeah. So I've got him coming on the podcast to talk about it a lot more. I mean, being in the most expensive real estate market in the country does not help at all.
No.
But, you know, what a tribal community that brand had as well, of people following mm-hmm. him from that parking lot to there. You guys have this, you guys have something similar. What advice do you have? Someone who's now backs up against a wall. All I know is fitness. This is what I dedicated. I used to be a dental hygienist, but that was 9 years ago. I can't go back to that life now. And I've got bills and stuff to pay. I need to create an online business. What would you tell someone to start thinking of doing? Like, what would be the first thing they should do when their feet hit the ground tomorrow as they start thinking of building something?
First and foremost, again, going back to what we said before, build it around your own belief system. So don't try to copy somebody else, whether that's me, whether that's Peloton, whether that's Paragon, you know, what is your belief in what people need and what they can do and what you can provide for them to change lives? So, if you latch onto something else, it's going to come off as inauthentic and you're going to get burned out of it real quick and you're not going to enjoy it anymore. So that would be the first thing. And then don't feel like you have to do one model. I don't think our model is necessarily better than a model where you're taking on purposely a lot fewer people and charging more. There's definitely market for all different price points and all different amount of one-on-one attention and things like that. So if you're like, man, maybe you do have a smaller Instagram following than I did. So get 20 people that are paying you $100 as opposed to trying to get 200 people that are paying you $10, you know, or whatever. So figure out what's most realistic for your time, what you actually believe in. And then I mean, you're going to love this. It's just content over and over and like keep delivering your message over and over and over again in different ways. And it doesn't need to be with a fancy camera and lighting and all of this stuff. It can be selfie style on your phone. Yeah. And just blast that out to the people that you do know and that are following you, and then take care. And once you have somebody, one person, one client, take care of those people. Our focus has never been new members. Still to this day, it's retention, retention, retention. Those members are bringing their friends. Those people are posting on their own Instagram and using hashtag street parking. And those people are, you know, that's how people are finding us more than anything I could do on my page, anything we could do on the street parking page. And we all, I mean, that's how we all operate. If your best buddy tells you that the restaurant, the new restaurant downtown is great, you're going to be much more likely to go there than if you just see an advertisement for it from somebody that you don't know or from their page. So
one of the biggest fears that, you know, and I touched on it in that episode was trying to create a belief in fitness. I think a lot of people are constantly trying to figure out new ingredients when I don't believe it's the ingredients, it's just the recipe. Like literally people like, did you ever get people like, oh, well, no, street parking's like CrossFit, but in your garage. And then you're like, okay, but let's not use the word CrossFit. We're trying to brand this street park thing. Did you ever run into that where there was, again, they looked at the tools, the ingredients you used, and they equated that with something else when really your recipe is so much more different than status quo CrossFit?
Yes and no. I still have a very deep, like, love and respect for CrossFit and all my years working and competing, with CrossFit. And I know a lot of our members have that background. Not all of them. We do have a good percentage of our members who have never one time stepped foot into a CrossFit gym and have never done a CrossFit workout.
Are you seeing that as a growing trend? Do you think that that population will continue to grow?
Yeah. And I think it's because of the anonymity thing. I think it's because of the intimidation factor of going into those gyms, and whether or not the gym was creating intimidation or it was a personal problem within the person. But people feel comfortable trying it on their own or with their neighbor as opposed to in front of all these strangers. A lot of what we do is very similar, obviously, to CrossFit, like constantly varied functional movements at high intensity, but we do also have tons of accessory programs and movements that we use that you wouldn't see in CrossFit. So I don't necessarily have a problem with people saying, yeah, it's kind of like CrossFit type workouts. The main reason we never associated ourselves officially with CrossFit and the reason that we won't is because CrossFit's also a brand. And we saw this year, if you're tied to a brand and the brand decides to do something that you don't agree with or, uh-huh, you know, causes, then now you're like, oh shit, now I got to make this big like statement and decide. And so that's the only reason, really. And I don't think it's necessary to call workouts CrossFit anymore to use that type of training. I think people have seen the movements enough now that you don't need to use that word to get for marketing.
It's so funny. People don't realize, like, we would look at SoulCycle and we'd say that's a spin class. Well, technically, you can't use spinning is an actual company that owns the trademark spin.
Oh, I know, because I was spinning certified, Johnny G.
Yes, 100%. I've got a spin studio, an indoor cycling studio inside of my building. My wife at the time, she started, and we got a cease and desist letter from SoulCycle, and we got an immediate one from spinning for using the term ride or die spin studio. And like, but people just, you know, equate, wow, just like Kleenex and tissue. People just say spin and don't even realize. And I think CrossFit, mm-hmm, is going to be very much like that, just like pizza. Well, pizza is pizza, but there's thick crust, there's thin crust, there's Chicago, there's this, that deep dish, and it's got its different flavors. And I believe a lot of people get hung up on trying to come up with the new ingredients. And the reason I picked, you know, you, Marcus Philly's Functional Bodybuilding, and LCK, you guys all use the same ingredients. You just all have your own unique recipe. You have cute, funny names for workouts. Right. Marcus has different, you know, beliefs in how these things should be done. You know, LCK is more of a bodybuilding physique type thing. And everyone, but it's all the same until the equipment revolution happens and we get more compact equipment and barbells get smaller and, you know, all this kind of stuff. We're all going to be using the same tools. What would you say to someone who's like, okay, I get what you guys are saying. I come from across the background too. I got these dumbbells. I don't know what it is to do with these dumbbells that would actually seem different enough to create a brand around it.
I don't think that the workouts need to be different enough. I think it's finding your voice and the way that you package the messaging. And for example, I don't know a lot about LCK's program. I've seen some stuff with it, and I'm sure if I read it and looked at her program, I would think that it's very well done. I would agree with it. I would probably enjoy doing it, but it is specifically not what we deliver with street parking. Not because it's not valuable or good or there's people that should be using it. It's just not our flavor. We're thin crust, she's thick crust.
Yeah.
And as soon as I feel like, well, she's doing thick crust, let's add thick crust in too, and let's add this. So you gotta just deliver your message the way that it makes sense. Don't try to reinvent workouts. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just figure out your messaging. You know, Marcus has his like hair flowing in the wind, like whole persona, like thing. And it's like the sexiness vibe, or I don't know, whatever. And he's gonna get a certain type of person with that. And he's very more methodical in the way that he speaks. And we're over here, like you said, like being silly and making funny videos and having summer camp. And that's our vibe. So just choose a way to package it. You don't need to change what's in the package necessarily. Choose a way to package it. We have sent people away from day one who thought that because it was Julian and I, it was going to be a competitor program. And instead of being like, oh shit, we need to please this person, we just simply say, hey, like, that's not what we do. Here's a list of 100 different competitor programs. Go do that, because this is what we're doing right here. And this is, our message. And it's not that Comp Train isn't great. It's just not what we do.
Sure. Have you had individuals in your scenario at one stage in their life, they were this competitive athlete, Instagram individual, and their life has changed and they're looking to do something even pre-COVID similar to have you spoken with any colleagues of yours from the previous CrossFit competitive realm? They're like, I see what you do, and this is exactly what I think I want to do. Have you worked or talked with anybody, even informally, like friends of yours that are trying to develop their own online fitness company?
Yeah. So obviously I still talk to Jason Kalipa a lot. I still talk to Chris Spieler a lot. I'm still good friends with Pat Sherwood, who has Linchpin. And he wasn't a competitor himself, but similar background. Those are probably the main ones that I still speak to pretty frequently. Yeah.
Yeah. If you were to sit down and talk to a 22-year-old games athlete right now, and they were to sit down and say, hey, you're my elder.
I'm only 25. Okay.
Tell me how this whole thing's going to play out for me. What do I need to be thinking of? What do you wish, you know, if you were to play Nostradamus for me because again, the one thing about the CrossFit from a sports perspective, unless you're that 1%, the livelihood and the career, the income and all that, it's just very tough to get by on unless you're very smart with it and you do it all right. Is this a route you would say is, you know, I made content a while back talking about, I believe games athletes, you know, as that sun is setting on them, they've got you got a moment in time where you're still relative, and that's the time to capture and create something new. You saw, you know, a couple of the guys did coffee, you know, Bridges and those guys, mm-hmm. They went into the, you know, like that, you have a moment in time before that sun sets. Do you see a lot of that? I mean, is that similar advice? Was I on the right thing?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people miss it. I think a lot of people underestimate how much work goes into running a successful business in general, let alone the online program. I think that a lot of people do have these games athletes with big followings, or, you know, are hot for a year or two. I think that maybe they do think, oh, well, I have a million followers or 500,000 followers. Like, let me just throw a workout up, charge $10, and that's it. And that's not at all. You have to be humble, right? Whether you're a gym owner who's closing and you're going to have 20 clients now instead of 200 that you had before, or you're someone with 500,000 followers who competed in the games. I've always said people will sign up for Street Parking because they follow me. And that was true, especially at first, before Street Parking was so well known. People will sign up. They will not stay just because I have cool Instagram posts. I have to deliver a product and be professional and be consistent and actually help them with their goals, or they're not going to continue to pay me. And I don't want a bunch of people to sign up for a month or two. So I think you are absolutely right with that. But I don't think that it's for everyone. I think that a lot of the games athletes that I know, not the ones that I mentioned in Spiel and Kalipa and Sherwood, obviously, you know, they're seeing success. Lauren Fisher's another one who I think has done a really good job, actually, compared to most people. Is you have to go into it knowing that it's going to be a lot of work. And you think, I want to post shit on social media every day? Like, I was having this conversation with one of our coaches, and he was like, I hate Instagram. And I was like, me too. You know, and of course I don't. It's given me so much and I enjoy sharing my story. But some days I'm like, oh, these freaking comments, or like, oh man, I need to post, or oh, we got to make this video for this thing. And I'm like exhausted. It's a real grind.
Yeah.
That maybe. Never stops.
Yeah. Content creation. There are some days you're just like, what the fuck do I talk about? I got nothing today. I got creativity wise, new topics, things to jam on. I got nothing today. And I understand that. I understand that very well. What for street parking, my people say, you know what? It's amazing the business they built, and all they're doing is providing programming. And then, you know, be like, well, you got the community and this, there's this whole other element to it. But have you guys ever thought of, is there an evolution to that? I mean, like, obviously everyone's trying to do a digital at home, you know, watch Miranda work out with Julian behind her, like on the TV, on the iPad thing. Is there anything there? Or are you guys going to keep the core focus of the business exactly what it's been?
We are going to keep the core focus exactly what it's been. The demographic, which we live the demographic. So it, again, it's very authentic, and we know our demographic because it is us. I wouldn't want to watch somebody and work out while mirroring them. So I'm not going to try to sell, you know, people's kids are running around. They have to stop the clock half the time. Like, people want to turn on their own music, you know, like the demographic that we're servicing, they don't want that. That's like not their thing. And there's, I think there's a market for that. But if it's not something that I would personally use or see value in or see as necessary, I'm not going to like latch onto it just because it's a trend.
I can see, I mean, I can totally see, especially, I'm sure you have somewhat of a relationship, like Rogue reaching out, like, okay, Miranda, we're going to create street parking garage gym packages, right? And these are whatever, yeah. You get a cut and all that. Like, there's so many different avenues you can take. So, I mean, supplement, all that, everything, apparel, all that. I think,
We do have a little bit of that. So we have a very good relationship with Rep Fitness. They have made us like plyo box covers, for example, and there's a street parking plyo box, a soft box that you can buy, and we get a cut of those sales, obviously. We have discount codes through companies that we work with, and there's different, you know, deals depending on which company it is. Brute Force Sandbags made us our own custom sandbag that we work with them. We joke around about how we're not an apparel company. We have to tell our members all the time, like, we're not an apparel company, because they're like, can you guys make socks and headbands? And we do make actually a lot of apparel. We don't tend to make a lot of money off of it, because sure, we give a lot of stuff away. We give a lot of stuff away. But it's like a break-even thing with apparel, but it's branding. I mean, it's our members wear it all over the place, and it's, you know, so.
I'm sure you got to have a client, a member come through the woodworks and be like, I actually own the second largest screen printing shop in Texas. I'll print your stuff. Have you guys found that? And then CrossFit had it. It's that grassroots. It's the clients, yeah, and members that come through with their own special SME, you know, niches that they do and able to help out.
Yeah. So we have, we have several employees at Born Primitive that are members, and they were members before they even worked for Born Primitive, and now they're there. So we have a good relationship with them. So there are definitely some of those things that are happening, but we always make sure not to lose our focus on the product being the number one focus for myself and Julian, especially. As soon as we're dragged into like, what size key should we put on this Born Primitive jogger instead of programming workouts and interacting with our members, we lose it. So
your neighbors that are not street parking members hate you guys?
No. So our next door neighbor, who I'm not joking, they're in their 70s. The wife became a member. She is a member now.
That's awesome.
And then on the other side, this family has like a bunch of teenagers, and they just, you know.
Yeah. The garage gym workouts are just HOA nightmares for most people. Like, they're generally getting in trouble, all that stuff. And you guys find that your members are kind of like, they're IRLing their own little sub pockets. Like, they're like, mm-hmm, any, you know, Cleveland, Ohio might have six of them, and they get on Facebook and create a Cleveland, Ohio street parking group, and they work, mm-hmm, out together and creating all these little mini cohorts all over the country, just doing these workouts together.
Yeah. So during COVID, a lot of our members have been doing a lot of like Zoom workouts together and things like that, because they haven't been able to get together in person as much. It is so great. Yeah. We encourage it.
Miranda, this is, I hope anyone listening to this is very inspired by this. I still think the online thing is still an early frontier. the majority of, I mean, it seems very busy, but the online, like going online is a very early frontier. You're going to have a lot more of it with a lot of brick and mortar shutting down and people having to pivot with their fitness knowledge and their experience and things like that. But I want to thank you so much for coming on today and jamming and you know, sharing your insight to creating an online fitness business. If anyone wanted to reach out to you, they might have a question, something I didn't ask, or they want to know more about street parking. What's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yeah, so my personal Instagram is at Fearless Miranda. To be honest, I'm not the best at my DMs because I get a lot of DMs. Streetparking.com is the website, or at streetparking on Instagram. You can email me, miranda@streetparking.com. And I just, the biggest takeaway that I hope gym member or gym owners have, because again, I've been a gym owner and I can't even imagine the situation that so many are in, is don't, if you're going to attack the online thing, the biggest piece of advice that I would give is don't try to think zero to 30,000 members. We used to laugh our heads off at the idea of 5,000. We were like, that's never going to happen. So just, you will end up doing inauthentic things. You will end up focusing on being too salesy and all of that, which is just exhausting. And it's focus on one person at a time. And that is going to be much more long-term sustainable. You're going to enjoy it much more. And you're going to be more successful if you do that.
Miranda Alcaraz, everybody. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.